Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and a few years ago, historian and poetry professor Jennifer Michael Hecht lost two close friends to suicide. So she dealt with it in a way that she knew how, by reading, writing, and asking questions. Her work resulted in an essay that asked something big of people who are contemplating suicide. You have to stay. She's now adapted the ideas of that essay into a book called Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It. She, as I said, is a poetry teacher at the New School, and her previous books include the bestseller Doubt, A History. Jennifer Michael Hecht, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
And listeners, have you been affected by suicide or attempted suicide, or have you yourself struggled with the thought of suicide? How did you get through it? What convinces people to stay? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Jennifer, you write that at this point, our culture's only systematic argument against suicide is about God. And so you strove to outline a secular argument against suicide in this book, yes?
That's right. And once I started thinking about it, I came up with two basic ideas. One is that you owe it to the community to stay alive. You owe it to your friends and your family and even strangers. Statistically, we can show that suicide rates go up after a single event, more happen. My real feeling about that was more that I wanted people to realize that it does so much damage to the community when someone kills themselves. But that there's a reverse to that, which is what's more important to me, which is even if you feel like a burden, you're depressed, you've had some reversals and you just feel useless, you're doing a tremendous gift to the community by persevering, by staying. It keeps people alive and you shouldn't feel useless. And the other part of it was that you owe it to your future self to stay alive. And once I started looking through history and philosophy, I found a lot of the great minds through history have said similar things, and that really bolstered and nuanced my ideas.
You write that religion took a wrong turn by relying on punishment in the afterlife as the primary reason against suicide. What do you feel are the shortcomings of that argument?
Well, the shortcomings are, people don't always believe in God. Sometimes people believe in a God that doesn't care about these things or that would forgive. And also, I've read and heard from many people that in their worst times, they have a lot of trouble feeling the God that they actually believe in other times. But when they're really, really depressed, they don't. Thomas Aquinas said the two other reasons that I gave, that you owe it to yourself and that you owe it to the community. And he also said God said no. But those other reasons are very important. But, you know, in the religious world, the God one was so large. And during the medieval period, the church started torturing corpses of suicides, confiscating their estates, so the family would be destitute sometimes. And that's why the Enlightenment secular idea has always been, we have the right to do this. It was a backlash against the church, but it wasn't the right way either.
So let's linger on that for a minute. That's a fascinating part of the book, that during the Enlightenment, the religious arguments against suicide gave way to discussions of autonomy. And
right.
Autonomy includes the idea that the individual has rights, even to the extent of deciding to take one's own life. But do you think that's wrong?
I do think it's wrong. I think that, let's go to the future life part of it. You know, we feel like integrated beings, but we have all these different moods, and we fall in love, we fall out of love, we're certain of things, we change our minds. And to allow one of your moods to murder all the others isn't right. And that's especially true when if you think about this in advance of the misery, you can contain that sort of that imp that wants to die. There have been several philosophers who said you have to sort of take yourself by surprise in order to kill yourself, and one of the things I'm suggesting is if you put up a fence or at a bridge so people don't do it, we can also put up a conceptual fence where we say to ourselves, no, that's not that's not what I'm going to do. You can think about it. You could be depressed, but don't do it.
Let's take a phone call. Dorothy in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi there. This is a great conversation. When I was young, I was depressed a lot, and I thought about suicide. And the arguments that helped me, I heard the religious, I heard all sorts of things. But somebody said to me, there's no guarantee it will cause an end of pain. And in a way, I mean, that was a selfish way of looking at it. You know, I was concerned. I just wanted to get out of the way I felt. Right. And later I learned emotions pass. If you just hang on through something, it'll mutate in a very short time. If you let yourself feel it and just let it pass through, and in a way, don't take it too seriously.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Well, the first thing you said is Hamlet's argument, right? But what dreams there may be. He's afraid of what might be there after death. But your second point is so important. We have a great deal of evidence in all sorts of different fields of study, epidemiological, sociological, psychological, that for many people the impulse passes. And if there's a gun in the house, you might not get to be there long enough for the impulse to pass. But if you don't have an immediate means to do it, or if you set up a little bit of a preparation, which it sounds like, you know, you have. You've got this idea that you know to wait it out now. But think of all the young people or people in all sorts of – they need to know these arguments that have been there through history and that our society right now hasn't been doing a good enough job of telling people.
I agree with that. And people don't realize how much people love them, how much it damages the people around them. I've seen that with friends and things.
Exactly.
Dorothy, thank you very much. And to her last point, she had been talking about appeals to the person's own happiness, future potential happiness, and that the suicidal feelings would pass. But at the end, she talked about what's owed to other people. And you came in talking about really a community argument, that you owe it to the community not to take your life.
Yes.
Do you think that's effective, though, in a practical sense? It's kind of scolding to somebody who is on the verge of killing themselves.
Right. But it's the opposite side of it that means the most to me, the side where you realize that if you would be doing such terrible damage to the community by exiting – that means that you're giving a great gift by staying. And I think most people, I have lots of evidence that most people who are really seriously considering suicide are thinking in terms of that they're a burden, that they're not doing anything by being here. And we need to have a little less individualization and realize that we're here for each other. You can save someone else's life just by persisting. It can be a beautiful way of living to know that you're important in that way.
You also have a theory in the book that suicide is delayed homicide.
Yeah, I'm not the only person who said it. Victor Hugo said essentially just that, and some other people have said it, that we have enough evidence throughout history. It hasn't been statistical, but it's been clear to people that one suicide leads to more suicides. And I know that's probably the most extreme statement in the book, but again, I'm not the only one to have said it in history. And
that one suicide leads to more suicides?
Oh, yes. There's tremendous evidence.
And we know it from pop culture, too, right? I mean, after Marilyn Monroe killed herself, I think you referenced this in the book.
That's right.
American suicide rates spiked by 12%.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a whole chapter that's about these statistics and that shows how this happens. There have been wonderful studies by social scientists and psychiatrists of all sorts. And I found such rich and fascinating material that it became a whole chapter looking just at that. And there are stories in the rest of the book that are less statistical, but that are about how we influence each other and how various famous suicides through history have been either celebrated or rejected by different thinkers.
Jose in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jose.
Hi. I spoke with my nephew who attempted suicide, got hospitalized and was through depression that was previously undiagnosed. But what I told him was that just to think of a place what he'd like to escape to, Southwest, someplace, and he's very, very, very intelligent, college-educated, could go anywhere in the world. And just pick that space and go. Don't need to tell anybody in the family that that's where he's at. I would take care of his lease and whatever else he needs to take care of. But he's got so much to offer that somebody else in the world could really use it. And whatever the immediate thing that triggered it here, just forget it.
You're a great uncle.
That was just my sense of what a loss it would be to the family
right.
to lose him.
Right. And of course, sometimes when people are down, they can't even think about getting out of bed, let alone run off someplace. So, but to know that somebody cares about them so much and that somebody would take care of their business if for a little while they couldn't do anything, that's an incredible gift.
Ed in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Hello. I just wanted to mention something that I heard in 12-step programs, a short sentence that's so moving. That suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Right. It's beautiful. And the only problem with it is, of course, there are people who, when you're depressed, you only remember when you've been depressed before, and it doesn't feel like it's going to go away. So you really need to prepare yourself beforehand and remember that it does get better. It may get worse again, too, but what life is worth living. And as, you know, philosophers... there are wonderful stories that I tell in the book, and I'll just say, you know, Camus said that it was the first line of one of his books that suicide is the only philosophical question, that you answer that before you go to anything else. But his conclusion was, it's wrong. Don't do it. Life is absurd, but it's still worth living.
Jennifer Michael Hecht, author of Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It, and Deborah in Levittown. You're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
Good morning. This hits so close to home. My brother attempted suicide over the summer and did not succeed. Mm. But what did happen was he ended up in a prolonged coma. Mm. He was in a vegetative state. The entire family was so deeply affected by this. Fortunately, he's on the road to recovery now, but talk about being a burden. I mean, I can't even imagine life without him,
yes.
But life with him as a vegetable might have been worse.
Yes, yes.
Do you say that to him now?
I do. He could not believe the outpouring of love, mm-hmm. that we were all there at his bedside, morning, noon, night.
Yes.
We couldn't leave his side. We were so afraid that he'd slip away or, conversely, that he'd wake up and we wouldn't be there
yeah.
to tell him to stay.
And that's what I'm trying to do with the book.
Well, guess what I'm getting him for Christmas?
What?
Oh, good.
A copy of your book.
Thank you. I'm delighted.
Thank you so much.
I'm delighted.
I think this will shed a light that our family really needs.
Thank you so much.
I thank you.
That's a beautiful call. Thank you so much, Deborah. Wow.
Yeah, I'm really moved.
Your friends who died, Sarah Hanna and Rachel Whetstone, who you write about in the book, were both poets.
Yeah, marvelous poets, and successful.
You're a poet as well as a historian.
Yes.
Suicide is unfortunately a topic that you think of when you think of some of the great poets, Anne Sexton, Sylvia Plath.
John Berryman.
Is your community of poets affected differently by this topic than others?
I don't know. I don't think that the rates are actually much higher. I've looked into it, but there hasn't been a really careful study of it. I think that art keeps people alive longer, it's not that more poetry kills you, but rather that people who are really in touch with the dark side of life tend to be poets because they want to explore meaning and beauty in this intense way. So, in a sense, we do have to pay careful attention to it, and that was the genesis of the book. I blog on Best American Poetry sometimes, and I just when the second friend and they knew each other, I just put out this kind of crazy call of saying, "Don't do it. We love you. Think about how much you're affected by losing these people and realize that people love you that much and need you that much." And yeah, you know, it's hard to stay alive, but if we're all in it together, you know.
And that led to this book.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, I mean, there are other communities that are disproportionately affected by suicide. And you ask, for example, for soldiers and veterans, to think of other soldiers and veterans
yes.
if they're in despair.
That's
Do you
right.
need to ask why? Do you need to look at psychological root causes, sociological root causes of why some groups, including soldiers and vets, commit suicide more than others?
Yeah, for sure. Though I have to say that the vets are something different, but the soldiers, they're not really doing it more than the rest of society. It's just that they used to be protected. They used to have a lower rate, I think partially because of the community and the purpose that they have together. And modern technology has lessened that a little bit, and I think that's part of the reason that it's gone up. But, with soldiers, more military members died by suicide last year than by combat, and that's just so striking that this inner you could do so much training to stay alive, but as I've said in other places, we need a boot camp of the soul. We need to do that work and remind ourselves before. And a lot of these people were not diagnosed as depressed, and it wasn't all misdiagnoses. Sometimes it's a reversal. We know that about more than half of the soldiers who took their own lives in the last couple of years were
I have to interrupt yes. because we're completely yes. out of time. Jennifer Michael Heck teaches poetry at the New School. You have moved so many people today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Her book is called Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It.